Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
On the 31st of May 2014, three friends, Morgan, Anissa and Peyton, were playing a game of hide-and-seek in David's Park close to their home in Wisconsin after celebrating Morgan's 12th birthday. However, unbeknownst to Peyton, as she ran deeper into the woods to find a hiding place, Morgan and Anissa weren't seeking her, but stalking her, hunting her. Their intention? To sacrifice her to the faceless internet myth, Slenderman. This is the Slender Man Stabbing. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. This case today is going to be unnerving if you haven't heard about it, because it involves kids. And the truth is that we always think that childhood is one of those really special spaces, a place of innocence and naivety, discovery, curiosity. We don't think of it as a place of murder. We certainly don't think of it as a place where teenagers premeditate and plan the killing of another innocent human being. But that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. It can also be uncomfortable to talk about how, at times, mental illness can play into these crimes. But before I start, I just want to make it clear. Having a mental illness will not make you a killer. Those of you who know me, know my story, know the loss that I've had very traumatically in my immediate family because of mental health. I will not have it said that mental health and mental illness is a reason that somebody goes ahead and kills another or tries to kill another person. The reality is that you can be born with a predisposition potentially to be a killer and also develop a mental illness. But I know a lot of you who watch this channel have struggled yourselves, and it really just adds to the stigma further when we start suggesting that a mental illness will contribute to you being a killer. No, a mental illness will cause an issue, without a doubt, on a mental health level. That means that the world can feel chaotic and scary at times. It can mean that you feel suspicious and paranoid at times, but it doesn't mean that you kill. But like I said, the bare bones of it is, you can also be a killer who develops a mental illness. And the other thing that we're going to be looking at today is whether we believe that children are as culpable as their adult counterparts. I think it's one of those areas that a lot of us debate regularly. I'll be interested to know your feelings at the end of this particular video. So who is the infamous, mythical Slenderman? So in June 2009, the comedy website known as Something Awful, it issued a call for people to submit a really modern, scary story, and they got thousands of submissions that rolled in. And the story of a faceless entity named Slenderman, who was known for traumatizing and abducting children, who was created by Eric Knudsen, he basically was successful. So this mythical creature is drawn wearing a black suit, sometimes shown with tentacles growing out of his back. He's very tall, very thin character with this featureless white face and head, and depicted wearing this black suit, often depicted hiding in forests. And he gave birth essentially in this character to so many stories. So it starts off as just that innocent entry into this competition, but it finds a life of its own, as urban myths tend to, and it fosters a whole barrage of people talking about this particular creature, this Slender Man, and also seeps into the consciousness of so many children. In 1976, a guy called Richard Dawkins, who is an evolutionary biologist. He actually came up with the term viral mimetic infection. It's an infection of thought. It can literally seep into your consciousness and stain it and make you think things that aren't necessarily real are true. That certainly happens. And I think today, that urban myth and the power that it can have in the hands of individuals who maybe, shall we say, have a predisposition for problematic behaviour and dysfunction, but also are suffering from things like paranoia, can culminate in what we're going to talk about today. So a lot of people, when this came out, this Slenderman idea came out, was that they started to think he was real. So he becomes this cult figure. He's even the subject of a Hollywood blockbuster. But we all know that he's still a fictional creation. So it doesn't matter how many people are talking about this particular person or thing, whatever it is. It is flipping terrifying, I'm going to be honest. When you look at pictures of him, it, whatever you want to call it, it does kind of play into the stuff of nightmares. And I think that the whole premise of that is it's meant to be a malevolent figure, something that keeps us up at night. And the very fact that it gains such traction to a point where it's a Hollywood blockbuster movie demonstrates the power of these things catching like wildfire. But like I said, it's still not real. It's like Monsters, Inc. on a lower level. All those things under your bed that you think get you at night, it's all in your head, isn't it? But it manifests and lots of people hook onto it. And I think we also have to remember that for children and young people, it can be quite exciting to scare yourself. We've all done that. We've all sat around a campfire and told each other scary stories as kids. We've all had those conversations when we're staying over at our friends and we're children where we want to scare the pants off the other person, because feeling fear in a safe environment is something that we want to do. It helps us to regulate the way that we experience it in real life. But obviously, it can also manifest in more problematic scenarios if you're a really sensitive individual. Now let's take a look at the actual perpetrators in this particular crime. So Morgan Geeser, she was born on the 16th of May 2002. And there's not a lot of background information on either of the perpetrators. But what I can tell you is, according to Morgan Geeser's parents, she showed a lack of empathy from a young age. For example, they were very surprised by her reaction when she first saw the movie Bambi. And they said that they were really worried for her to watch it because they thought she was going to be really upset when the mother died, because that's the normal reaction. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a lot of movies, even these days, cartoon movies even, where something awful happens in the first few minutes. It's highly traumatizing. I really struggle with all of that. I don't know about you. I'm old school, me. I like the idea of happy endings. And I do appreciate that through cartoons, we have always seen these kind of really violent escapades play out. Because I watched Tom and Jerry as a kid, and that was enough to know that violence was going to play a part in cartoons throughout the ages. But they do seem to put these traumatizing things in to these films. And Bambi is one, of course, when the mother dies, and it's very distressing. But apparently Morgan Geeser just said, run, Bambi, run, get out of there, save yourself. So she wasn't very sad about it. Arguably, looking into that as a mother, it could just be that she realized the mother was dead and didn't want Bambi to meet the same demise, throwing it out there. But arguably, her mother said that it was quite strange as far as she was concerned. When schoolmates were asked about her, apparently she was quiet, she was creative, and they were qualities that actually drew her future victim, Peyton Luttner, to her. So when they met in fourth grade, apparently she was sitting all by herself, and Peyton felt that no one should have to do that. So she went over and she started to talk to her, and that introduced us to Peyton. She's a special girl. She's somebody who cares empathically about the other people around her. And if she sees somebody by themselves, she wants to engage with them. That's a deeply compassionate human being right there. And the thing about being a deeply compassionate and empathic human being is sometimes you put yourselves in situations that you shouldn't, because it's your natural inclination to care about everyone and everything that means that you will spend time at times with people who do not deserve your company, and you can get hurt by those human beings. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Peyton should have changed her personality whatsoever. I don't believe that for a minute. I'm just saying that it automatically places you in a bigger position of risk because you care about certain people who others are wary of. And when people are wary of other people, it tends to be for an instinctual reason. Now, this relationship changes a little bit in sixth grade. And the reason for that is a girl called Anissa Wire, who was born on November the 10th, 2001, she becomes part of the friendship group. Now, this isn't unusual. Dynamics change, friendships dissolve or move on or grow, etc. But it can be really challenging when somebody new joins that party, so to speak. Now, Peyton, she's known also as Bella, by the way, so sometimes you'll look at reports and they'll refer to her as Bella. She was struggling with this new dynamic. She found that Wire was actually quite a cruel person. As far as she was concerned, she was very divisive at times. And she didn't like how she was starting to feel a little bit alienated from the group. So you have Wire and you have Glaser becoming really close. And
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
This is concerning her because at the end of the day, they had been really good friends before Wire joined the group. But nonetheless, she continues to have the friendship because she still believes that there is a worth to the relationship that she has with them. But she's on the back foot, so to speak, regarding the connection that the other two seem to have. And that's something that she's struggling with. She also really didn't like how Wire develops this unhealthy obsession with Slender Man. And this happens after a friend introduced Wire to Creepypasta, which is a horror fan site. And it's where users create fake encyclopedia entries and other testimonials about fictional supernatural beings, but they do it as if they are actually real. And one of these is Slender Man. Peyton, because I don't know, she's a pretty typical individual, found it a bit terrifying. She didn't like it. It scared her. It worried her. Because it was as if the girls were actually acting as though Slender Man was indeed real. Now, they were all attending Horning Middle School at this point, and whilst Wire and Gaser were not the most popular students, I would say that Peyton was more popular, and to some degree, her relationship with the girls offered them a bit of a lifeline when it came down to fitting in, because they were, shall we say, a little bit more fringe. They were considered a little bit more strange. Even though they were liked, they didn't have the same connections as Peyton did. Now, it feels as if Wire starts to truly believe that Slender Man actually exists. And then she uses that belief to get Morgan Gaser to believe in him too. And Gaser takes this to a whole new level. So she starts to believe that she's having these private telepathic conversations with him. And immediately from a mental health perspective, I know that if a young person is acting as if something is real to the point where they believe that they're having actual conversations with them, it is going to concern me. Some people will say, well, a lot of kids have imaginary friends. Yes, they do in early childhood. I myself had a really scary imaginary friend. But if I'm honest, I'm not that convinced it's that imaginary. Anyway, that's a story for another time. But nonetheless, as a young child, we will often see that imaginary friends appear, they come, they go, and so on and so forth. But when we're getting into teenagehood, we're really not expecting to see that kind of reality. And if a child is talking about those things, yes, they can be making it up. It goes without saying, kids make stuff up. But at the end of the day, if that isn't the case, we're looking potentially at mental health decline. There is something going on a mental health level for that young person. And both of the girls, so Gaser and Wire, they start emailing Peyton all these links to the videos that they said will prove that Slender Man is real. So you've got Peyton being very sensible and saying, this scares me a lot because you're all acting like you're buying into this thing being real. And that scares me about you. But she knows he isn't real. But they're trying to lure her in to their shared delusion, so to speak. And again, it's not unusual for young people to live in realms of fantasy, particularly if they're going through difficult times. And teenagehood is difficult when you're confronting your reality as a young person and you're coming up to teenagehood. And they were, you know, they're at an age where they're just coming up to adolescence. And we know these days that young girls in particular, they tend to start that journey earlier than 13. But there is something about the way that they're acting that Peyton is feeling disturbed by. And Geysa also told Peyton that she was being stalked by Slender Man and that he'd look in her windows at night when she was sleeping. And Peyton starts to get really scared. It starts to haunt her. She starts to become really worried about this information that she's being told. So she gets scared enough to actually confide in her mother. And her mum immediately is like, I'm just going to go and do what her mother does and figure this out. And she comes back to Peyton and says, listen, Slender Man is literally not real. There is nothing to be concerned about. Your friends are just trying to scare you. And that's a really good reassurance from Mum. And Mum isn't going to be taking it seriously. She's been a kid. Loads of kids do this to one another. It's kind of exciting to see your friends feeling afraid and you're controlling that fear. It's not because you're a psychopath or a megalomaniac. It's just quite intoxicating to see that happen. So for her mum, she's probably been in situations like that. Who in the 80s didn't do Ouija boards? I did many of them. I'm still scared by some of the experiences, although I'm pretty sure it was just my friend moving it. Nonetheless, that's what we did when we were kids. The 80s was quite boring. Now, as Geysa and Wire get closer, Peyton, I would say, started to drift away. And the reason for this is she said that the two weren't very nice to her, particularly Anissa Wire. She would say really mean things, she'd call her names. But then, interestingly, as soon as Morgan Geysa wasn't there, Anissa Wire would actually apologise, almost as if she was just doing it in front of Morgan to show off, to kind of stamp authority. But it's interesting because that means that she was either manipulative, I am going to be really nasty in front of this particular individual to assert my authority, but I don't want you to not like me. So as soon as she's gone, I'm going to manipulate you to go, oh, they're not really that bad because they're being nice to me now. That is very manipulative. Or she is somebody who generally has a low self-esteem and she wants to seem like she's confident, but really is doing it just to act out in that way, to assert that confidence that doesn't really exist, which is why she apologises. So it's one of those, either insecurity or, of course, more of a malevolent being. Now, the events of the attack. We get to May the 31st, 2014. Now, the group all gather together. They're all age 12, and they're celebrating Geysa's 12th birthday. It's Friday night. They go, first of all, that evening to a local roller skating rink, and then they go home for a sleepover. Now, on reflection, Peyton says that there was some strange behaviour at the time of the sleepover. And the reason for this was that all the other past sleepovers had had, Geysa had always wanted to stay up all night because she couldn't do that at home. But on the night of the birthday party, she wanted to go to bed. So clearly for Peyton, that is atypical behaviour for the group. They usually stay up late, they chat into the early hours, and therefore they're not concerned about what's going to happen the next day. They're going to be tired, yes, but it's going to be worth it because they've got to be a bit naughty. That's what you do when you stay at sleepovers, but the other girls aren't up for it that particular evening, and that did strike her as strange. She talked about the next morning and she said, I remember waking up, they'd already gone, woken up and gone downstairs on the computer. So I woke up and I went down with them. We had donuts. So the fact the two girls have got up before her and not actually got her up as well, that's strange. When you're kids, you tend to just want to get your mates up straight away because you want to carry on the fun. So that does suggest again that they are plotting something. And for Peyton, this girl who's just celebrated the 12th birthday with the friends, you know, she's been there to celebrate Geysa's actual birthday. And she has no idea of the horror that they're intending to play out on her. So after they've had donuts, they then ask Geiss's mother, Angie, if they can go outside to play. And I think that brings into sharp focus just how young these girls are, that they're actually asking the mother if they can go out to play. That demonstrates just how young, because that's what you do when you're a kid. You have to get permission to go out. And yet what is not youthful at all is what's been going on in the two perpetrators' minds for 6 months. Because what I'm going to talk about today, they've been planning for 6 months. Now, Peyton said that it was Geiss's idea in the morning that they were going to go to the park, and that normally Geiss wouldn't have been allowed to go because she'd have needed an adult with her. But because she was with friends and it was a birthday party, her mother had let the three girls go on their own. And that makes sense. You need a bit of flexibility. Birthday. Having fun. And even though it doesn't really make sense logically, because how is it safe to go just because it's your birthday? I kind of get it. I'm a mother. So at this point, Geiss and Wyre, they lure Peyton into playing a game of hide and seek with them. This is in David's Park, which is a heavily wooded area near Waukesha in Wisconsin. Now, allegedly at the park, at the bathroom, Wyre did try to knock Peyton's head against the concrete wall. And this was in an attempt to apparently knock her out. And this is because she said, from what I read on the computer, it's easier to kill people when they're either asleep or unconscious. And it's also easier if you do not look them in the eyes. She later told the police, I kind of banged her head up against the concrete. So this is chilling because, first of all, she's read about how to kill, the best way to kill, what you should and shouldn't do. She's obviously spent a great deal of time researching these possibilities. And here she is now actually trying to play it out in reality. And Geiss says she actually remembered things in the same way. She noted during her interrogation, Anissa tried to knock Bella out. Bella got all mad and stuff, and I was pacing in circles. Yes, one would imagine Bella did get mad. Basically, it's not necessarily on the priority list of being a friend trying to knock your mate out, is it? It's going to throw it out there. It's kind of the opposite of what we expect our mates to be doing. But in spite of all this, Peyton innocently follows them into the woods to play hide and seek. She's 12, so she's not thinking, these two individuals I'm with could be so disturbed that they're about to try and kill me. And so she willingly goes, even though this means that no one's going to be able to see them. They're not going to get disturbed, whatever happens, which gives these two predators at this moment in time perfect opportunity. The truth is, Peyton was not thinking in that way. Now, Geiss, she's going to be the seeker first, and Peyton and Wyre, they go off to hide. Now, the unsuspecting Peyton just carries on going about the business, playing the game, and she gets instructed to lie down and to cover herself with leaves. She thinks, of course, that this is all part of this innocent game of hide and seek, and you've got to put yourself in that mindset. Peyton is acting like a 12-year-old girl, so she's going ahead, having fun. My thing is a bit weird, covering herself up with leaves, but hey, it's hide and seek. So, to some degree, it's contextual with what they're doing. And Wyre waits allegedly until the perfect time before shouting to Geiss, now go ballistic, go crazy. And then apparently she turns around so she doesn't have to watch the unfolding scene of brutal carnage. So Geiss at this point walks over to Peyton and says, don't be scared, I'm just a little kitty. And then she pounces on her. She pins down Peyton, who's completely confused at this moment in time, and then apparently whispered, I'm sorry, in her ear before brutally stabbing her 19 times. And when I say brutally, I mean it was butchering her. So she stabs her in the arms, the legs, the torso, and this is with a 5-inch long, which is a 13-centimeter knife that she's taken that morning from her own mother's kitchen. Now for Peyton, this is catastrophic. This is a 12-year-old little girl being stabbed that many times with that implement. Two of her wounds were actually to major organs, and one, and this is unbelievably divine intervention as far as I'm concerned, one missed a major artery of her heart by the width of a human hair. Another went through her diaphragm, cutting into her liver, into her stomach. Horrific injuries. Then Wyre and Geiss actually tell Peyton to lie down because they're going to go and find help. But instead, They just leave her for dead. So it's so unfair, isn't it? And not only have they carried out this horrific attack, they think they've killed her, but then they try to reassure her that they're going to go and get help for her, and then they don't. Now, somehow, this little warrior, and believe me, Peyton is a little warrior, she managed to drag herself to a nearby road. At this point, thank God, she's found by a passing cyclist named Greg Steinberg. Greg immediately called 911 as soon as he saw her.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Waukesha County Line, I'm transferring over a caller on Big Bend at the dead end just south of Rivera.
Okay.
Came upon a 12-year-old female. She appears to be stabbed.
She appears to be what?
Stabbed.
Stabbed?
Correct.
Okay.
Sir, you still there?
Yes.
Hi, sir. So are you with this 12-year-old female?
Yeah, she says she's having trouble breathing. She said she was stabbed multiple times.
Stabbed multiple times?
Yes.
Okay, sir, are you with her right now?
Yes.
Is she awake?
She's awake.
Is she breathing?
Yeah, she's breathing. She said she can take shallow breaths. She's alert.
Okay, stay with her. We're sending the police department. Don't hang up, okay?
Oh,
hold on just a minute.
Up.
Don't hang up.
Okay.
Okay. Hold on just a minute, sir. We're sending officers. Oh. Is there any assailant around?
I didn't even look. I don't see anybody.
It's a dead end. Okay, stay right with her, sir. Is she on the ground or is she standing up?
No, she's laying on the grass.
Laying on the grass. Stay.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Great with her. Just let me know if she is remaining conscious or not, okay?
Okay.
Is there any bleeding going on?
Her clothing has got blood on it.
Where are the wounds? Do you see where the wounds are?
No, I don't know if I should be rolling her over and checking or not. Do you know where?
Okay, just stay with her and just let me know if she's conscious or alert or stops breathing or anything. Hold on, I'm going to talk to the ambulance. Police are also en route.
Okay, thank you. I'm bothering you at all? My shade? Okay.
Okay. Just keep her in that position. Just let me know on her breathing.
Okay.
What's your name, sir?
My name?
Your name.
My name.
Okay, were you just passing through?
Yes.
Okay, and you found her and she was just laying there?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so you see any active bleeding or blood spurting out or anything like that?
No, unless it's underneath, or I just see dried blood.
Okay, just dried blood. Okay. Okay, is she still breathing? Is she still alert?
Yeah.
Okay, stay with her. Yep. Stay with her. Right. Keep an eye on her. Hold on just a minute. Do not hang up, sir.
Okay, I will not. Who did that to you? Or don't you want to talk?
And she didn't say who did this or how it happened?
I don't know if she wants to be talking. I started to ask
okay.
her. And then
that's okay. If she's...
You gotta save her energy, I think.
Okay, but you see nobody else around you. Are you clearly visible when they pull down that road towards the dead end that they'll see you?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Are you clearly visible when they come down there so they see you?
I've got a strobe flashlight on my bicycle. I'll shine that towards any emergency vehicle I see. And I'll be standing in the middle of the road.
You're in the middle of the road? And where is she, in the side of the road?
Yeah, she's on the grass. It's a little trail I take on my bicycle.
Okay, see. Don't hang up, sir. Just stay right with me.
Okay.
And let me know immediately if you see anything else suspicious in the area, car, a person, anything.
All right.
Keep your eyes open. Was there anyone coming or leaving, or any cars coming or leaving when you came upon her?
No.
Nothing?
No.
So were you on foot walking by, or did you pull up in a car?
Bicycle.
You're on a bicycle?
Yeah.
How did you see her? Did you just...
She's right in the middle of the little path I take.
Middle of the little path. Okay.
Yeah. There's a squad car coming now.
Okay. The squad car coming? Okay. Flag the squad car down. Protect her.
Here he's coming.
Does she have a bike or anything with her?
No, I don't see it. One sandal is off, but, you know, maybe 3 feet away from her.
Okay. Flag that officer down. I'm going to let you go. Okay. You meet with him right now, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
And Peyton describes the realization after she's been stabbed that she's going to die if she doesn't get up and move. And she says, I got up, grabbed a couple of trees for support, I think, and then I just walked until I hit a patch of grass where I could lie down. When the police and the EMT workers arrive, Peyton's focus, she said, fades in and out because she can't remember everything. She said, I couldn't focus much because my body was working so hard to keep itself alive. She said, it was probably like, vision isn't really a priority now. And that makes perfect sense. So she doesn't remember everything about what happened that day. And certainly her consciousness was coming in and out because her body was trying to preserve the energy that she had just to allow her to survive. They then rush her to the hospital. She had to undergo 6 hours of surgery, but my God, she managed to survive. And I'm going to say, even now, she didn't just manage to survive, she manages to thrive. First of all, she's able to communicate the names of her attackers to the police before she's actually had the surgery. So now they know who they're looking for. And then when she awakened after 6 hours of surgery, Peyton said that her immediate concern was where her attackers were. She said, I remember the first thing that I thought after I woke up was like, did they get them? Are they there? Are they in custody? Are they still out there? And that, again, is absolutely something that makes sense because she knows they wanted her dead. And if they haven't been caught, well, there's a possibility that they still want her dead. Now, it's around 5 hours after the attack, Wyatt and Geisa are apprehended. This is near Interstate 94 at Steinhaffel's furniture store. They'd walked 4.9 miles from the scene of the crime. When they stop them, they find that the knife that they used in the stabbing was actually in the bag that they were carrying. So they're banged to rights. Not only have they got the witness who's the victim saying that these are the people responsible, they have the attempted murder weapon with them. Peyton was told this news, and apparently she was massively relieved to hear that the police had captured both Geisa and Wyatt, as she was basically struggling with the pain from the attack and the surgery that she'd undergone, and she certainly didn't want to have to carry the anxiety of those potential near killers being on the loose. And once Peyton's awake, the police are trying to gather as much information from her as possible, and she actually had to write on a whiteboard as she had the intubation tube in her lungs because she couldn't breathe on her own for a while. That's how seriously injured this poor young girl was. Now, the police interviews are strange. So if you go online and watch the interrogations of Wyatt and Geisa, it is disconcerting. Firstly, because of their age. Secondly, at times because of the childlike tone and quality of the way that they speak, but also because it feels really strange, some of the stuff that they're saying. It just involves like a level of malevolence, but also a level of disconnect. When they're interviewing Wyatt, well, she comes across, I would say, as extremely innocent. So Detective Trissoni is the person questioning her. She comes across as naive. So the first question that she actually asks the detective, bear in mind she's been brought in for this incredibly serious crime, is whether the detective knows how far she'd walk that day because she wasn't very athletic. Again, it's so left field when you think about what they're about to discuss. Geisa, she was interviewed by Sunday Call Detective Casey, and what can I say about that interview? It's not very psychological, the way I'm going to describe it, but I do think it's appropriate. Creepy. Really creepy. First of all, her voice is just so childlike. but the content of what they're discussing is quite the contrary. It's just so odd. Now, immediately, she tells the detective, I wanted to be locked up so that I didn't hurt her, but that time has passed, and I'm in here because we were careless.
Just told I wanted to be locked up so that I couldn't hurt her, but that time has passed, and now I'm in here because we were careless. I knew this would happen. I knew we'd get in trouble.
Well, we're just trying to sort this all out right now to figure out what all happened. So you wanted to get locked up so you were in trouble?
I didn't really genuinely want to be locked up, but at one point I sort of did. It seemed.
So you decided a while ago that in the sleep overnight that this is what you would do it?
Yeah.
Why do you think it was your sleep overnight that your
sleep overnight? Because we would all be together. It was a flawless plan, actually.
I don't think you were careless. I think you were pretty careful. You went ahead and planned the attempted murder of one of your friends, hoping that you would kill her. Doesn't feel careless. It feels premeditated. She also said, the last thing she said to me was, I trusted you. I hate you. Then Anissa lied to her and said we'd go and get help. So even in that moment, Peyton is able to speak to the perpetrators of this horrific crime, saying that they've betrayed her, saying that they absolutely breached her trust. And the response to that is that Anissa Wire lies, says we're going to go and get help, much as she acts in a certain way when she's got Geisa around her and is quite nasty to Peyton, but then when she leaves, she's nice to her. Well, so too in this situation, when the horror of what they've done unfolds, she's willing to manipulate Peyton to believe that help is coming. Also, Geisa in her interview says, people who trust you become sort of gullible, and it was sort of sad. So it's clear from both the statements and her behaviour that she genuinely, at this point, at least, does not feel guilty for what she'd done. Now, during the interviews with the police, both girls tell them that it was all around proving the existence of Slenderman and that they needed to prove their loyalty to him. They believed that the only way that they could do this was to murder someone. The only way you could become a follower truly of the character was to go ahead and end somebody's life. Their goal was apparently to meet Slenderman at his mansion. It's called Slender Mansion in the Nicolet National Forest, which is roughly a 200-mile hike from their location. After which, once they'd met him, he'd be so chuffed that they'd gone ahead and murdered somebody that they would become his servants and live in his said mansion. Now, bear in mind, these girls are 12. They're 12. Literally, they're not young children. At the age of 12, for the most part, we have a level of conscience. We have a level of empathy. Yes, it's confusing. Yes, we're going through some pretty turbulent times emotionally, psychologically, socially, educationally, but we tend to be embedded in reality. So these girls have decided that actually Slender Man's real, and more than that, all they need to do is take the life of this innocent person, and then they get to be his servants for the rest of their eternity. Which, I'm not gonna lie, sounds awful anyway. Who would want to be the servant of some tall, slender, ghoulish freak? But apparently, Geisa and Weir didn't get the memo on that and fancied it. Now, Wire tells investigators that Geisa proposed the idea of killing Peyton Leitner to become proxies of Slenderman in late December 2013 or early January 2014. Yet Geisa insisted that Wire was the architect of the plan, saying, she made it seem necessary, and I figured that if it was necessary, then I would. So both are blaming one another for the level of manipulation. But either way, the preteens managed to keep that plot secret for months. And really disturbingly, they would apparently whisper about it in public, and they use code words like cracker when they were talking about using a knife and itch when discussing the actual killing, which is highly chilling. We're talking about 12-year-olds, and they're actually creating code names for things that are so deeply malevolent that enable them to talk about it in public. And yes, that would have been quite exciting for them, because clearly only they would know about it. But it also says something very dark, doesn't it? The fact that they like recognizing that they have that power to discuss something so terrible, so truly chilling, without the person who is going to be the brunt of their actions being aware. As Gaser and Wire later told police, they apparently had multiple ideas about how to kill Peyton. Yeah, they discussed lots of different possibilities. So they thought about duct taping her mouth during the night, stabbing her in the neck, but apparently they were too tired after a day of roller skating. Again, doesn't that just bring back into sharp focus the fact that their kid's too tired after a day? I could have killed her by wrapping duct tape around her and stabbing her in the neck, but I was exhausted from roller skating, so we decided not to. The next morning, they'd plotted to kill her in a nearby park bathroom instead, because that's where the blood could go down the drain. And this again speaks of premeditation of a very high level. Now, Peyton left the hospital 7 days after her attack. And unbelievably, that warrior returned to school in September 2014. So she was back living, back carrying on pretty immediately after this horrific ordeal. Obviously, investigators want to figure out what the hell has gone on to see these two little girls turn into murderous monsters. Yes, their victim didn't die, but the full intention was that she would. That was what they happily went ahead and tried to carry out. And it just didn't make sense to the investigators. It didn't make sense that these two kids would want to do that. So they start to look at whether there was any reasoning behind their actions. So they look at Morgan Geese's mental state, and it turns out that Geese had early onset schizophrenia, and this manifested itself in various ways, so various hallucinations. These visual hallucinations began when she was 3, so she was very, very young. Even though her parents were aware, they didn't actually get her diagnosed. So she's having all of these quite scary hallucinations, and this is completely atypical for a child of this age to experience, but never diagnosed. And as she enters puberty, which we would expect, her disorder intensifies. So if you're starting that early on and you have this particular mental disease, so to speak, then as you get to adolescence with all the changes, we do see that intensification of these particular problems. Now, these hallucinations, they included ghosts, they included colours melting down the walls, imaginary friends, one named Maggie, another named Seb. One hallucination that occurred often was of a man that Geese named It, and his body was apparently the colour of smoke and ink that stood behind her in mirrors, have shifted around corners, similar to Slender Man. So I guess for her, it wasn't too much of a leap to believe that Slender Man was real when she was physically seeing these visions that are very real. We have to remember that when we're talking about schizophrenia, the visions are as real to those people as if I'm speaking to you right now in this particular content that I'm expressing. It's the same. It feels absolutely like reality. Now, after her arrest, Geese's mother, Angie, she said that she became floridly psychotic, and correctional officers said that Geese was often seen talking to herself. She would pretend to be a cat, and also she kept ants as pets. I do think you're limited when you're locked up as to which kind of pets you can have. And I do think ants are pretty awesome, but the fact that she's keeping ants as pets kind of speaks to an internal loneliness for me. I can only say that from my experience of working therapeutically, but it suggests the lack of connection in certain spaces and places, and having those creatures keep you company is better than dealing with the internal loneliness that you experience. She also saw unicorns, and she had continual conversations with Slender Man and other fictional characters such as Severus Snape. So she seems to be somebody who's dealing with a huge amount of delusion mentally. We get to autumn 2014 and Geese's moved to the Winnebago Mental Health Institute. This is to determine if she's going to be competent enough to stand trial. On the 22nd of October 2014, she gets the official diagnosis with early onset childhood schizophrenia. However, Instead of the treatment and medication that she should absolutely have had, they decided to focus on explaining the law to Morgan to prepare her for trial. It's probably not quite the priority as balancing her mental health at this moment in time. And nearly half a year later, at this point, Gacy is now found competent enough to stand trial. But the truth is, that schizophrenia that she was diagnosed with was continually left untreated for 19 months. And as a result, she basically ended up in a state of psychosis, which they say caused irreversible brain damage. So during this period of psychosis that Morgan was locked up, she wasn't receiving any antipsychotics. She lost the ability to do basic maths, to read. And with respect, Kathleen Hale, who wrote a book about this stabbing, said that's child abuse. But I guess potentially investigators were less concerned about Gacy's mental health and more concerned about bringing somebody to justice for a horrific crime. Now in December 2015, she gets sent back to Winnebago. She's given antipsychotics and it seems that as a result of her mental health becoming more balanced and being given those antipsychotics, she starts to feel remorse. Also, we can acknowledge age because she's now a young adult. Unlike it or otherwise, the truth is there is a transitionary experience from being a younger person to a slightly older person. You see the world differently. So that will play into it as well. On March the 23rd, 2000...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
16, Gacy gets sent back to jail. She gets sent back to jail with medication, but apparently once she's in jail, she rapidly deteriorates. And that does not surprise me. When you're in a mental health facility, even an imperfect one, it feels very different to jail. When you are locked up in prison with individuals, shall we say, who are more streetwise than you, who are more physically capable than you, and without a doubt, the people that Gacy would have been surrounded with would fit that category and description, she is not going to cope effectively at all in those circumstances. She is going to be an absolutely vulnerable individual who would be easily bullied. Bear in mind, even at school, she wasn't necessarily in the thick of it with friends. She was quite a loner. So it's going to be very isolating and quite scary for her to be in prison. Now, when it comes down to the charges, following the investigation, both girls were charged with first degree murder. And due to the nature of the offences and just how serious the offences were, both girls were waived out of juvenile court to be tried as adults. Now, I will tell you that was quite a controversial decision, but nonetheless, that happened because of the premeditation and planning involved in this horrible crime. Now, if they'd actually been tried as juveniles, they would have been incarcerated for up to 3 years, then they'd have been placed under supervision until 18. But as an adult, they faced completely different potentials. So 65 years in prison could be what they were looking at. And that's a massive difference, isn't it? 3 years with supervision up until 18 to 65 years, which is basically spending your entire life in prison. Let's look at Wyatt's court case. So in August 2017, she takes the deal. So it's offered by the prosecution. And what she has to do is to plead guilty to attempted second degree homicide. She then had to face a trial to determine whether she'd spend her time in prison or in a mental health institution. Wyatt's defence team, they tried to prove that she'd been led along by Gacy, the true driving force behind this crime, and they went ahead and painted this really clear picture of an innocent, struggling young girl without many friends. Gonna say, it's not how it sounds in reality though, is it? When you think about Wyatt and Peyton's experience of her, she certainly didn't seem like the person who was sweet and innocent. She sounded a little bit cruel, if I'm honest. And again, I appreciate that people change as they grow. When you're 12, you can do some pretty awful things that you'd never do at 22. But nonetheless, portraying her as this sweet, innocent victim, it doesn't wash with me. There's nothing sweet or innocent about her actions. And I don't feel that Gacy being painted as the main perpetrator is the correct way forward. I understand they're going to do that, but nonetheless, it's a hard thing to swallow when you consider what we've been told by Peyton about this particular character. And what I would say about Wyatt's father is he went on a witness stand and didn't do a great job. Didn't help her case very much. Testified that, first of all, she didn't suffer from depression. So he's not pushing it forward that this girl is struggling because she's isolated and alienated and depressed because of it. But what I will know is his ex-wife, so the mother of his other two children, she'd recently passed away. So he said that he wasn't really taking that much of an interest in Wyatt because he was preoccupied with helping the other children grieve, and therefore he neglected Wyatt to some degree. Now, the jury, they actually find her not guilty by a mental disease or defect. So in 2017, the December of that year, she gets sentenced to 25 years to life, an indeterminate sentence which involved at least 3 years of locked confinement and involuntary treatment in a state psychiatric institute, followed by communal supervision up until the age of 37. So that instantly introduces us to the knowledge that she is going to get to have a life outside of being locked up in an institute. It's as simple as that. That sentence means that she has a future. Now, Morgan Geiser, her court case begins. Now, Morgan Geiser, in October 2017, accepts a plea offer. Now, this plea offer means that she wouldn't go to trial, but she'd get evaluated by a psychiatrist to determine how long she should be placed in a mental hospital. So when Morgan's attorneys pled a case, they told Waukesha County Circuit Judge Michael Boren that she believed that she had to kill herself or that she'd be killed by Slenderman. So that's what motivated her. She didn't feel that she had any choice. It was kill or be killed. And many psychiatrists, with respect, they said that Morgan had been living with undiagnosed schizophrenia. And it turns out her father also suffered from undiagnosed schizophrenia. And she also had oppositional defiant disorder. So ODD, that is a reference to a particular condition which includes a frequent and ongoing pattern of anger, irritability, arguing and defiance basically towards parents or other authority figures. ODD can also include being things like spiteful, seek revenge and be very vindictive. That's what we would say about an individual who exhibits ODD. Now, their argument was that these emotional and behavioral issues had caused really serious problems in her life, full stop, and together they affected her family life, social activities, school, etc., and that she'd been living with these conditions for a very long time. They also testified that she continued to see things like Snape from Harry Potter. Apparently he'd visit her in a cell, prevent her from getting enough sleep. It does sound like a very Snape thing to do, that, doesn't it? Disturb you, prevent you from getting sleep. Just the kind of character you'd imagine him to be. Don't get me wrong, I know Snape turns out to be a bit of a hero in the Harry Potter movies, but nonetheless, he's one of those characters that you can imagine would be a little bit Machiavellian at times. So she reportedly told her parents as well, and doctors as well, that being in prison wasn't too bad. And I'll tell you why it wasn't too bad. Because of her Vulcan mind control. Yeah, because of her Vulcan mind control, she could allegedly be anywhere she wanted. Live long and prosper. Now, she later pleaded guilty, but she was found not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, which makes perfect sense because what I'm talking about there is some very high level mental illness and also some deeply problematic experiences that she's having. We're not excusing what she does at all. We're not saying that what she did was acceptable in any way, shape or form. Being schizophrenic or having ODD or a combination of those does not make you a killer. But she is struggling massively with her mental health. Now, the other thing for me personally, coming from my mental health background, it worries me a little bit that she's been painted as the main motivator, the main manipulator in this crime, because she is going to be very malleable and very susceptible to other people's suggestions based on the fact that her reality isn't like yours or mine. her reality is full of all of these visual hallucinations, it won't be too difficult to convince her that Slender Man is actually real. And for her, Slender Man may indeed have felt real. Now, in February 2018, she ends up being given the maximum sentence. That's 40 years to life. An indeterminate sentence, which involved 3 years locked confinement, in addition to involuntary treatment in a state psychiatric institution until complete resolution of symptoms or until the age of 53, whichever may happen first. And then after that, she would have continued communal supervision, periodic reevaluations, and or reinstitution and further treatment as needed. So a big package there to make sure that she doesn't pose a risk to the general public again, even if she is released. Now, whilst Geyser will periodically have the opportunity to actually petition for her release from the mental health facility that she's kept in the future, she will remain under the institutional care for the duration of her sentence. Now, online records state, so the court records that are out there, that the court further finds that conditional release would pose a significant risk of bodily injury to the defendant or others. So they're concerned that she does have the potential to act in a similar way again, unless she is consistently supervised. And I would imagine that's because they want to make sure that she can never stop taking her medication, and that the poor victim in this case will feel that her safety is paramount. Now, an expert actually told the court, after her psychotropic medications were adjusted, Geyser has shown no symptoms of psychosis and is open about treatment, never resists taking her medication, and has never been violent or aggressive. And I think that's a good thing, because it's indicative of the fact that with the right treatment and support, she can hopefully live a life without violence and also without the horror of the hallucinations that have haunted her for such a long time. Morgan Geyser was actually overcome with emotion when she was sentenced, and she actually said this: I just want to let Bella, obviously that's Peyton, and her family know that I'm sorry. Now, during her trial, Geyser had actually been committed to the Winnebago Mental Health Institute. She was the youngest patient there, and as per official court records, she still resides there and she still will do for the foreseeable futures. Now, let's get on to Anissa Wire. Because in an appeal court hearing on the 10th of March 2021, Anissa Wire, who was 19 then, she submitted a letter to the court stating that she was sorry and deeply regretful for the agony, pain and the fear I have caused, not just to Peyton Lightner, but to my community as well. I've exhausted all the resources available to me at the Winnebago Mental Health Institute. If I am to become a productive member of society, I need to be part of society. She went on to say, I hate my actions from May 31st, 2014, but through countless hours of therapy, I no longer hate myself for them. Just gonna throw it out there. I'm all about reform. I like the idea of rehabilitation. I think second chances are important, particularly when there is a redemptive quality to the actual offender. However, it does worry me that she no longer hates herself for her actions, where she brutalised and all but murdered a girl that she'd planned doing that to for a period of time. I think you should pretty much loathe yourself for that. Loathing yourself for that particular action and hating yourself for doing it doesn't mean you holistically hate yourself. We can despise ourselves in a moment. We can look back at who we were and despise that part of ourselves. That's kind of what taking accountability and responsibility is all about. What a disgraceful, disgusting human being I was. How glad I am I've changed. I can like myself in this moment, but I hate myself for being that and for being that person then. They deserve my despising. But no, she's had therapy, and apparently now she doesn't hate herself at all for doing that. Worries me. Just gonna say it, worries me a little bit. I genuinely think that she should have a real loathing, as far as I'm concerned, of who she was in that moment. Wire also said in the letter that she's taking the responsibility that comes with living with a mental illness by communicating with total transparency to her treatment team members, participating wholeheartedly in all aspects of her treatment, and maintaining 100% medication adherence. She said, I am sorry and deeply regretful for the agony, pain and fear I have caused. Wire wrote also, I take full responsibility for my actions. I vowed after my crime that I would never become a weapon again, and I intend to keep that vow. Now, again, just going to say my feelings here. That is stepping to the side of responsibility there, because she's saying that she was made a weapon. So therefore, she's giving responsibility to Geisa. She's saying it's Geisa's fault that she did it. So she is basically projecting the blame onto Geisa and saying that without her, she would never have become that weapon. And that, like I said, concerns me a little bit, because it would be far better to say, I recognize what an abhorrent human being I was. I was young. It was grotesque what I did. I was fully aware of what I was doing, even though I might have had mental health issues. And it disturbs me and disgusts me that I could have ever acted that way. I would never do that again, because I understand the impact of my actions. And I refuse to ever act in a way that in any way, shape or form could harm another human being again. But to deflect, for me personally, says, well, if you're that malleable, if you're that susceptible, how can you promise not to be a weapon again? How would you be able to do that? But they accept it. So in July 2021, so just a couple of years ago, to July the 1st when this happens, Judge Michael Moran ordered Wyatt's release from the Winnebago Mental Health Institute, gave state officials 60 days to draw up a conditional release plan, and required that Wyatt be assigned State Department of Health Services case managers to go ahead and track her progress until she is indeed 37 years of age. That's the length of her commitment, essentially. Now, September the 13th, 2021, she gets released. There are multiple stipulations, don't get me wrong. So at the time of her release, there was 24-hour GPS monitoring that required that she didn't leave Waukesha County without permission. She was also somebody who was going to have her internet usage monitored, and she wasn't allowed to have any forms of social media, which makes sense because we don't want her creating any other ideas in her head about mythical creatures that will lead her to kill you. She'd also be required to take medication, and she'll be personally escorted to regular counselling sessions by a caseworker. It was also written that she'd be required to live with her father during her probation. Understandably, that will be a bit of a blow for Peyton's family. And indeed, Steve Lyons, who's a spokesman for Peyton's family, said when this actually played out that the family were disappointed that Y was being released and wished that she had served a longer sentence. He also said the family had been mentally prepared for this day for a long time, and added that the family are reasonably comfortable with the rules Wyatt must follow after her release, which includes no contact with Peyton until 2039 and GPS ankle monitoring. However, guys, as I said, it's always interesting to see how these things play out in reality. So according to Fox 11, a judge has actually granted Anissa Wyatt conditional release from GPS monitoring September 2023. Now, she continues to be supervised, but basically that tag that she wears so they know where she is, no longer required. That's got to be tough for Peyton's family, because we should always have in mind the protection, both psychologically and physically, of the victim. And I'm not necessarily sure that's played out as it should have. Now, in the aftermath of this horrible crime, the creepypasta wiki was actually blocked throughout the Waukesha school district. They were that concerned. And on the Tuesday following the stabbing, the Slenderman creator, Eric Knudsen, poor Eric Knudsen, who just thought he was doing something artistic, he actually went on to say that he was deeply saddened by the tragedy in Wisconsin and that his heart goes out to the families of those affected by this terrible act. It must be awful to be associated with this brutal attempted murder. That clearly isn't something that Eric Knudsen is guilty of in any way, shape or form. The administrator of Creepypasta Wiki, they said that the stabbing was an isolated incident. It didn't represent their online community. Of course she did. She's not going to be like, we're directly responsible for it. But at the end of the day, she wants to validate that there is nothing her site has been responsible for, that this was just one of those isolated incidents. And she went on to say that Creepypasta Wiki was a literary website and that they did not condone the murder or satanic rituals. Well, of course, we didn't think you were going to come on and be like, the thing about Creepypasta is we condone murder and we condone satanic rituals. I'm not even sure satanic rituals is a part of this, with respect, you know? I don't think those 12-year-olds were thinking about the satanic rituals. I think they were thinking about this creature that they had created and manifested in their mind, and that they delusionally believed that they could meet if they went ahead and murdered their friend. But nonetheless, Creepypasta Wiki wants you to know that they do not condone murder or satanic rituals, as if anyone out there was actually imagining that they did. actually, there's probably a group of highly religious people who think that they did. But never mind. On the whole, we're not that kind of judgmental society, are we? Now, members of the Creepypasta community, they held a 24-hour live stream on YouTube. This was on June 13th, 14th, 2014. And that was all to raise money for Peyton, which is good because it shows that they feel a level of responsibility and accountability to that victim. They're not responsible for the actual attempted murder, but the information that perpetuated the manifestations of delusions in those girls' brains certainly did come from there. On August 12, 2014, Governor Scott Walker issued a proclamation declaring Wednesday, August 13th, 2014, Purple Hearts for Healing Day, and actually encouraged the people of Wisconsin to wear purple to honour Peyton Lightner, which is lovely. He also praised the strength and determination that Peyton had shown during her recovery. She is an absolute warrior. We can all agree with that. She is absolutely awesome. Now, the city of Madison, Wisconsin, they held a one-day Bratwurst Festival to honour Peyton on August 29, 2014, several days before Peyton returned to school. So they got lots of hot dogs and bratwurst, sold them and raised money for her medical bills. The event was run up with over 250 volunteers and raised over $70,000. Aren't people good? Aren't people, for the most part, we cover so many nasty things on this channel, but there's always that point in most cases where people show the most incredible community spirit and care deeply about victims of crime and families of those who've lost. And again, here we are telling a story about how these amazing volunteers raised over $70,000 to help Peyton and her family. And more than 5 years after this horrible stabbing, after this crime that we've talked about today took place, on October the 24th, 2019, Peyton, who was age 17 at that point, she spoke to ABC's 2020 about her experiences for the first time. During the first few years after the attack, Peyton had to rebuild her life. And she said it was really difficult to trust people again. She claims that she even sleeps with a pair of scissors under a pillow, which doesn't surprise me. Genuinely, if I'd near been murdered in a game of hide and seek, why my friends? You bet your bottom dollar. I'd be sleeping with one eye open and a range of implements around me to protect myself. She spoke of her scars. She said, I don't think much of them. They'll probably go away and fade eventually. What mental resilience is that? In a time where we are so conscious about the way that we look, and we've got this young girl with all of those stabbing injuries, and actually she doesn't give them much thought. Incredible.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Girl, incredible person. And when she was asked what she'd say if she ever saw Morgan Geeser again, Peyton added that she'd thank her because that attack, that horrific ordeal that she went through, it inspired her to pursue a career in medicine. Isn't that amazing? Isn't there something just so fantastic and fabulous about human beings who are dealt the most outrageous slings and arrows when it comes to their lives, that they can take it, repackage it, reframe it, and make it into something positive? From my own experience of deep trauma, it's something that I cling onto so deeply because in my own world, that's what I had to do. I had to take the worst moment of my life and hopefully the most horrific moment I will ever endure in my life. And I had to give it purpose. And by doing so, you don't let go of what happened, but you make it into something that changes you in a way that has deep meaning to your life and hopefully to the people who know you within your life. So for her, going out and wanting to save lives, which is what she'll do working in medicine, It speaks volumes about this incredible girl. It really does. Now, since the attack, Peyton said that she really has done her best to resume a normal life, despite the notoriety of this case, despite years of litigation. And she says that trusting others, especially new friends, has been particularly difficult after the attack. She said she has friends, but initially, even with those friends, she kept them at arm's length. She said that at the end of the day, trusting even family members has been difficult. And her mother said that that has been one of the things that she's really noted, that it's difficult for her to believe in people who come into her life because of the horror that she experienced at the hands of people that she should, to all intents and purposes, have been able to trust. Peyton also talked about the fact that she sometimes thinks about her former best friend's mother, Angie Geiser, with quite a lot of sympathy. She said, I thought about what she's going through and how hard it must be for her, because I'm sure a lot of people are trashing on her and hating her and saying that it was her fault, but they're wrong. It wasn't her fault. She said, Morgan's schizophrenic. There's nothing that she could have done to stop it or control it. It wasn't her fault. And Peyton's own mother, Stacey, she said, I was angry for a long time, especially at Morgan's parents, knowing that Morgan's dad had schizophrenia for a long time. I thought that they were maybe just in denial and ignoring her symptoms, but I'm not angry anymore because I recognise that they are going through their own hell. It's also worth recognising that Geiser's mother is actually advocating for people who are in the juvenile system with mental health issues. So it's galvanised her and meant that, yes, this crime was horrific, but even she is trying to do something purposeful because of it. Now, Morgan Geiser had an appeal attempt in 2020, but the appeals court rejected the petition to be retried as a juvenile. So her attorney, Matthew Pinnix, he argued that she should have been charged with attempted second-degree intentional homicide rather than first degree, and argued that Geiser gave statements to investigators before being read her Miranda rights. So on that technicality, he petitioned the Supreme Court of Wisconsin to review the ruling. But in early 2021, the Wisconsin Supreme Court declined to hear her appeal. And in September 2021, so this is in wake of Wire's release, it was revealed that Peyton had moved out of Waukesha County and was attending an undisclosed college as a sophomore student. I can understand she probably wouldn't want to be in the same area as her attempted murderer, no matter how balanced that person is meant to be. Also, it's lovely and heartening to know that she really is getting on with a life that she so deserves to get on with. Now, unsurprisingly, as far as I would say, Geiser filed a petition for conditional release in June 2022, and it makes sense because Wire's been released for the very same crime that she was convicted for. Now, she did actually withdraw that petition last August. However, in June 2023, three doctors were asked to again examine Geiser because they are evaluating her on her new petition for release. This is following both a request from the defence and the state. Her defence attorney, Tony Cotton, said, Geiser withdrew her request last year because we didn't feel we wanted to pursue it. When asked what was different this year, Cotton replied, the progress that she's made. It's been substantial. She's matured, she's healthier, and she's doing very well. Cotton added, Geiser's been confined for almost 10 years. She's had a very limited release from Winnebago Mental Health Institution near Oshkosh, but my understanding is she's maximised her privileges at the facility due to her good behaviour and substantial progress. Now, this case has been set for a review hearing that was meant to happen August the 28th, 2023, which is this year. I haven't been able to find any details as to the outcome of that, so I'm imagining that it's been pushed back. So since this horrendous crime played out, there's been a hell of a lot of a debate regarding the effect that the internet can have on children. So this debate has occurred that the stabbing was basically based on the access that kids have to the internet, and if they hadn't had this kind of material, it would never have happened. Russell Jack, Waukesha Police Chief, he said that the stabbing should be a wake-up call for all parents, adding that the internet is full of information and wonderful sites that can teach and entertain, but it can also be full of dark and wicked things. He's absolutely right. The dark web exists, and even on Google itself, you can come across some heinous things that should not be for children's eyes. Also, parents don't often understand parental controls, and that's because they like to believe that a child who is in their home is safe. And of course, that isn't true. In fact, you're far more likely to meet horribly predatory people online than you are walking around the streets in your local area. John Egelhoff, a retired FBI agent, He argued that the internet has become a black hole with the ability to expose children to a more sinister world. He suggested that the best way to avoid future incidents like this was for parents to keep track of their children's online habits and to educate them on the differences between right and wrong. Shira Chess, that's an assistant professor of mass media arts at the University of Georgia. She stated that creepypasta was no more dangerous than stories about vampires or zombies. She argued that websites were beneficial and that they gave people the opportunity to be better writers. I have to say, I think that every single one of those comments is appropriate, and I kind of agree with all of them, full stop. The internet is probably the best thing and the worst thing that has happened to us in my lifetime, and it is something that has changed the world, both for good and for bad. But invariably, it gives children from, shall we say, less privileged background, a very democratic playground of information where they can learn and grow and develop without necessarily having to attend the most prestigious universities in the world, which for my age group would have been something you'd have to do to get the knowledge that is now available to every single person out there with access to the web. Having said that, it's also led to some pretty brutal, grotesque and disgusting types of behaviour, from online trolling to pornographic material of partners being released when people are unhappy exes, to situations that we've talked about today. So like I said, the very best and the very worst of humanity is on the World Wide Web. What happened to Peyton is horrific. Absolutely without a shadow of a doubt, it should never have occurred. I guess the big debate that we're left with is, do children deserve the same kind of sentences as adults? Invariably, I would say that they don't, because I genuinely think that their brain is still developing all the way until 25 years of age, but that doesn't mean they should not be severely punished. I do have an unease about this particular case. I feel that one is being treated very differently than the other. I feel that one has had blame projected at her versus accountability and responsibility being taken by both of them. And I do think that it makes sense that Gisa is looking at trying to get freed because Wyatt has managed to. And that must be galling for her and for her family. That noted, some of you may feel that these two girls should have been kept in prison or institutions for the rest of their natural lives. After all, they did try to end the life of somebody who they should have held dear to their world, which was their friend Peyton. And it's Peyton who has to live with the scars for the very rest of her days. It's good to know she's doing well, but this story could have ended very differently if she hadn't had the wherewithal and the warrior spirit to drag herself to a place where she was found, and to some degree she was rescued and healed. We wouldn't be talking about two girls who get the chance to live their lives freely, would we? Because we'd be talking about two girls who premeditated and planned the murder and successfully implemented that murder over a very long period of time. Ultimately, we wouldn't be talking about potential redemption. We'd probably be talking about the fact that these two girls were never safe to walk the streets again. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar Sampler Pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.